Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pole Position, the motorsport show here on Rock Sport Radio. Andy Alston with you alongside Adam Todd, broadcasting live on DAB Digital Radio across Central Scotland, online and on TuneIn. So on the show this week, Max feeling fine after a win that's sublime. No more flack as McLaren are back. Petrucci keeps his seat with the Ducati fleet. And Paddon is back in the World Rally Pack. All this and more on Pole Position. Now, Max Verstappen took a stunning win at the Austrian Grand Prix last weekend, with the Red Bull man finishing ahead of Ferrari's Charles Leclerc, with Valtteri Bottas well behind and taking the final step on the podium. Now, Max started from second on the grid, but fell back after struggling to get his car off the line, and the rest after that, as they say, Adam, is history.
Oh, it was unbelievable job from Max Verstappen. As you mentioned there, the slow start, and I think everybody was a bit disappointed because you were perhaps thinking that that chance of seeing Leclerc and Verstappen dueling throughout the entire Grand Prix, that had been taken away from us due to the poor start from Max Verstappen. But the way he came back through the field was sensational, and full credit to Max Verstappen. And you know, it's just one of those drives that you will always remember. It's difficult to put into context how good it was, because he certainly wasn't in the faster car. You'd say the Ferrari was quicker. Mercedes did have a difficult weekend, but still, for Max Verstappen to have that slow start and to go down to seventh, and let's not forget, it's very difficult to overtake in modern-day Formula 1, and especially to overtake the front runners. So he did a terrific job. Max Verstappen deserves a lot of credit. And it reminds us, you know, he's got so much potential, and if you put him in a world championship winning car, guaranteed he'll be world champion come the end of the year.
Well, what was your take? Just you mentioned the various overtakes that Verstappen made. What was your view on the one on Charles Leclerc?
Great overtake. Simple as that. You know, I thought it was a good overtake. Yes, there was a bit of few people saying, oh, perhaps this will be a penalty. And this all started off in Canada. You know, it's now go by the rule book, you know, and perhaps we need to have a review of the rules. I think everybody's agreeing with that. But for me, you know, Leclerc, he went on the outside. We were talking about this off air, and you made the point, obviously, if that's grass, well, he's not going to try that. So he's just hung it out there. It's not worked. And I thought it was a really good overtake from Max Verstappen. He tried in the previous lap, but this time he braked that little bit later, took a bit more of track to not force Leclerc. You know, there's still room for Leclerc, but at the end of the day, it was Verstappen's corner and Leclerc should have backed out.
It reminded me of an overtake Verstappen made on Bottas, I'm sure it was last year at Monza, going into Turn 1, and he kind of forced Valtteri so wide, he kind of almost invited him to have an accident, if you know what I mean. He was basically saying, I've got the corner, or we're both going off, and, you know, Bottas had to go down the escape road, and Verstappen was handed a penalty. But there's been a maturity, a development from overtakes like that, where it's, you know, just beyond the limit to what we saw on Sunday, where it was hard, but fair.
It was, and I think the other thing we have to discuss is how long it took the FIA to make the decision. You know, when all the fans have left the track, you know, it's a couple of hours after the race, more than a couple of hours, 3-4 hours before we know who's actually won the Grand Prix. I mean, that is just unacceptable, because I think every fan, unless you're a diehard Charles Leclerc, admitted, you know, it was a fine overtake. The amount of tweets I saw that said, oh, I'm a Ferrari fan, I thought it was a fair move. And I think that tells its own story. We want to see good racing. I mean, imagine the furor if they'd given Max Verstappen a penalty. You know, drivers would then be thinking, oh, do you know what, I'll just settle for second. There's no point overtaking, you know, because you'll get a penalty unless it's a clean move under DRS, which is a bit artificial, as we know. So I'm just glad there was no penalty. Best race of the season by a mile, and I think it's reminded everyone why we love Formula 1 so much. You know, having these two young stars of the future, Leclerc, Verstappen in the front row, Mercedes just had a horror show from start to finish that weekend, unfortunately for them, but it was just what we needed in Formula 1, especially after the dullness that we saw the week before in Paul Ricard. So it was a fantastic weekend, and what a great track the Red Bull Ring is as well.
Do you think that was the best drive we've seen from anyone in this new hybrid era from Max Verstappen last weekend, Adam?
Oh, that's a question and a half. It was certainly up there. I'm trying to think in the top of my head. I thought Daniel Ricciardo's victory in Hungary in 2014 was pretty impressive. That was his second win for Red Bull, you know, and with three laps to go, made that big move on Fernando Alonso, and that was kind of the time when we realised just how good Daniel Ricciardo is at overtaking on the brakes, really braking late, but still managing to make the corner. But yeah, I would actually say it is the best we've seen, because the fact he was down, you know, 7th, 8th, you know, it wasn't as if he got lucky necessarily through strategy in terms, you know, the race then went to rain conditions, you know, he went on wet tyres earlier. So for me, I think it was the best drive, you know, the way he clawed back that time, because even once he was behind Bottas and he'd got Bottas done, you're still thinking, you know, he's still got to get up to Leclerc, and then it's one thing to get up to him and then to do the overtake. So for me, I would say it was the best drive we have seen on the hybrid era. Would you agree?
Well, it says a lot when you lap your teammate, doesn't it? You know, I mean, Adam, how much longer do they give it with Gasly? Let's be honest here. I mean, it's not happening. I mean, I've been reading comments from people saying that, you know, if they get rid of Gasly and they swap Kvyat, that's a big move everyone's talking about. If they do that, is it going to get them second in the Constructors' Championship? Probably not. So why bother? The problem I have with that argument is, for me, Gasly is his confidence. It's going on race by race. He's not... You know, when you're in such a situation like that, you know, you need to try and get yourself out somehow. But for me, it's just not happening with him. And if you've been lapped by the one direct comparison you have in Formula One, which is your teammate, there's something seriously wrong there.
Well, this is the problem with Red Bull at the moment. Christian Horner said after the race that, you know, Gasly's still getting used to the car, and hopefully he'll get the confidence. But he's not going to get the confidence when he's getting lapped by Max Verstappen. Yep. I mean, to be quite frank, that's unacceptable. Mm-hmm. As a Red Bull driver, you're in one of the top teams. Your teammates won the Grand Prix, and you've been lapped. You know, unfortunately, there's no excuse for that. And his only saving grace is that, you know, imagine if Kvyat ended up back in that Red Bull team. You know, it'd be a bit of humble pie, wouldn't it, for Mr. Dr. Marco, Helmut Marco. And I can't imagine them taking Kvyat back just to avoid that situation. And they've not got a lot of options at the moment, Red Bull. Unusual, we're saying that, because they've been so good at producing young talent. At the moment, though, you wouldn't say there's anybody ready to come in and fill that spot from the Red Bull programme. And it would have to be a driver from an external team.
Now, of course, it was the first race this year where a Mercedes driver wasn't on the top step of the podium. There's rumours of that car struggling to cope in the warm conditions. Well, joining us on Pole Position to talk a little bit more about this is Bethany Waring from Reed Motorsport, who joins us now. Bethany, good to see that a different team can win a race this year, of course.
For the show, of course. It's good to not have Mercedes winning everything, although I don't think Toto Wolff would quite agree with that.
So, I mean, Bethany, were you surprised that Mercedes were so off the pace throughout the weekend?
Ahead of the weekend, people were saying, oh, this is a Ferrari track because it's got long straights, which is where Ferrari's advantage is. Mercedes have the advantage through the corners where you need the most downforce. And it wasn't nothing this weekend, but it wasn't as big an impact compared to the straight lines. Everyone was saying that, but at the same time, you had to think, well, we've been saying that all year, that this won't be Mercedes' track. So I was kind of surprised, even if everyone had been saying it, because I didn't want to get my hopes up. And I think a lot of people felt the same way, because Hamilton and Wolff had been saying all season, our Ferrari are right behind us at this track. And then Hamilton will go and lap everybody. Mm. So it was a refreshing change.
Mm. And another weekend, of course, where Sebastian Vettel just couldn't take advantage of problems from Mercedes.
Yeah, it wasn't entirely his fault. The qualifying put him in the mix, and the midfield isn't where you want to be, especially at the start of the race. But Verstappen and Carlos both showed that it wasn't about where you qualified, it was about where you finished. Well, for Verstappen, it wasn't where you ended lap one, it was about where you finished. So it was... Vettel really has no excuses for not being up there and taking advantage.
Mm. And what about his teammate Charles Leclerc? Because Adam and I were just chatting about the move that Verstappen made on Leclerc and what have you. But see, for me, after the race, Bethany, I don't think Charles handled himself too well, though. You know, very upset standing there on the podium. You know, he was making comments over the team radio criticising the pass that Verstappen made. But, you know, for me, he was well beaten. And if he was going to be angry with anything, he should have been angry with himself, because if he had built up a bigger gap throughout the course of the race, he would have won it, because it was his race to lose after the first corner opening lap.
Yeah, it was his race to lose. If he'd built up a big gap, if he'd backed out of when Verstappen was coming through, which a lot of people say he should have done, and then come back, which obviously wouldn't have been the easiest of the situations, but anything, and you get the feeling that perhaps Ferrari were relying on the stewards to come and penalise Verstappen at that point. Maybe I'm not in the Ferrari strategist's room, unfortunately, but maybe they were hoping on that, and that meant that Charles didn't risk falling even further behind Verstappen by a risky move. It was his race to lose, and I imagine he was quite frustrated with himself. Charles, whenever he makes a mistake, he's come across on the team radio and said, "My bad, that was me, I'm really sorry," and calling himself all sorts of names, which he probably doesn't deserve. But you just get the feeling that the calm, collected Charles from the start of the season, where he wasn't happy with the mistakes that were being made, but he was more able to adapt and accept them, is he maybe had one or two too many mistakes to be able to just keep calm and take it.
Bethany, I've that's a very interesting point, and I've made the argument on this show a few times and come under a bit of criticism for it as well, where I felt that, you know, fair play to Charles on one hand for saying, you know, I've got things wrong and you know, he's been honest with the team. That's commendable. The trouble with that is, you can't make mistakes like that when you drive for Ferrari. When you're at, you know, Sauber, where he was last year, or you're in the midfield and you're working your way through the sport, you get a little bit of slack, you get a little bit of leeway. But when you're with Ferrari, one mistake is too many, Bethany.
Well, it is only his second year in Formula One. And I think the odd mistake you can, especially compared to Vettel, he's not been the only man at Ferrari making mistakes, and the fact that he's been able to handle himself, people have been more accepting, of course, but he shouldn't be making those mistakes. But he's still in that adjustment year, which is why I think it was a good decision for Ferrari to back Vettel at the start of the year, not put the pressure on Charles to say, "You're the one that's going to win the championship for us." Let him make those mistakes that aren't going to cost him, well, that will cost him the championship, but aren't really going to... That aren't going to ruin anybody's expectations. And then next year, in his third year, he'll come back and be better. But between his own mistakes, Ferrari's strategy, and just general Ferrari not being at Mercedes' level, I imagine it's not been easy for him.
No, absolutely. Bethany, that's great. Thank you very much for your time here on Pole Position. And that's Bethany Rewarding there from Reed Motorsport, speaking to us on Rock Sport Radio. Adam, I just want to get your thoughts on one thing before we go for a quick break there. Bethany making the point about Charles Leclerc, still only his second year in Formula 1. Made a few mistakes along the way, but... Do you think that Sunday there was an interesting glimpse into his character and the way he behaved, where, you know, he was very, very upset, but obviously about the overtake, but, you know, I was kind of expecting him just to be up there, be on the podium and just get on with it, you know, raise a trophy, spray a bit of champagne, away you go, but he was just not for doing anything like that at all.
Well, I think it's good in that sense, that the fact, why should he be happy with second? You know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And also in the sense that, had he just kind of followed normal procedure, if you like, at the end of the day, I think it was good to see that emotion in the sense that he was disappointed to lose. Obviously, you're specifically referencing the comments in terms of the overtake. Mm. You know, a driver wants to win, and I think a driver's going to try and use any mechanism he can to address the media, if you like. And I personally felt that the Leclerc, you know, you could understand that he felt the overtake was perhaps a bit aggressive. As I said, it was never a penalty. I thought it was a great overtake from Max Verstappen, but, you know, Leclerc's obviously going to be disappointed.
No, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick breather, Adam, and when we come back, we'll look at one team on the grid who just seem to be getting better and better. Up next on Rock Sport Radio.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Now, McLaren have been getting a lot of praise recently after a string of good results, with Lando Norris finishing in 6th place and Carlos Sainz taking 8th at the Austrian Grand Prix last weekend. Sainz, of course, starting that race from 19th place on the grid. Now, Adam, you know, credit where it's due, that was a great drive by both McLaren drivers last weekend.
Sensational. Carlos Sainz, certainly. Any other weekend, he's nailed on to be driver of the day. Max Verstappen, though, he was just sensational. Well, last Sunday, I suppose you could make the argument, well, Verstappen shouldn't have made the mistake at the start. But Carlos Sainz from 19th to 8th was a stunning drive. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see much of it during the actual race because it was such an exciting battle at the front. But it was a shame not to see some of his overtakes. And he was a bit frustrated after the race, the fact that people didn't really appreciate just how well he had done. I mean, to make up 11 places was a fantastic achievement from Carlos Sainz. He's a great driver. I've always rated Carlos Sainz as well. He seems to be in this kind of middle ground. People don't necessarily think he's a great driver, but people think he's above your good driver.
Yeah.
He's been teammates with Max Verstappen. He's been teammates with Nico Hülkenberg, two very talented drivers. He was the man that was brought in to take Fernando Alonso's seat, and you have to say he's doing a sterling job at the moment, Carlos Sainz. Lando Norris, what a driver. You know, what a prospect he's turning out to be for McLaren. You know, he's beating Carlos Sainz in terms of qualifying. Sainz is outscoring him. It's a good combination at the moment, but Lando Norris, P6, and made a good start at the weekend, you know, because he had dropped back on a few occasions in previous races this season, but you saw him go wheel-to-wheel with a Mercedes, yep. You know, really taking the fight to him up as high as 4th, I think it was. So, great experience for Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz. It's just good for McLaren, because how many times in this show over the past 18 months have we been on and it's just been all negative, you know? Yeah. It's good for a change to actually be discussing them in a positive light.
But is it a positive light? And I'm going to sound like the bearer of doom and gloom here, but Are we speaking about them in a positive light because the likes of Renault, Haas, Racing Point, Alfa Romeo are doing okay? They're maybe not doing as well as they could be, however, so McLaren are kind of defaulting to that, you know, fourth place in the Constructors' Championship best of the rest? Or is it because this team is genuinely making progress?
Yeah, there's two sides that you can take that question. I mean, you could look at this and say, you know, 10 years ago, would McLaren be happy with a 6th place finish? You know, there are a team that, well, are there a team that's used to winning recently? Certainly no. Mm-hmm. You know, I think this argument that they're a world championship winning team, not as much now as perhaps previously, or that's been clear to see. So they've really taken a big hit from a publicity perspective, that's for sure. So 6 and 8 from McLaren, you know, even just a few years ago, you go back to the likes of 2012, 2011, 2010, that's not a good result, you know, that's an absolute embarrassment. So you can look at it from that angle, but they're a team that was at a very low point last year, they're building up again, and to be ahead of Renault, I think is still a good achievement. You know, they're a full works team, the resources that Renault, the money they're now putting into this into the project for Renault to try and get them back up, especially with the lineup Ricardo, Hülkenberg, two very capable drivers, two very strong drivers. I really like that driver pairing. But yes, Renault have been poor this season. I think everybody was expecting more. I was expecting them to be the dominant midfield team. At the moment, McLaren are taking that part. You mentioned Alfa Romeo, perhaps the issue with them, they've not got two drivers contributing as equally as McLaren do.
Kimi Raikkonen's obviously got a lot of their points. Giovinazzi, good to see him get a point in Austria. I think he's done all right, Giovinazzi, this season, but the points don't suggest that. I don't think the car's been great. Racing Point car's not been good. The Haas, again, I mean, what is going on with Haas at the moment? They just don't understand the issues of where it's going wrong. So, yes, the midfield perhaps not as tight as we expected it to be, in the sense a lot of teams are struggling. You know, Racing Point are not doing well. Haas are not doing well. Williams, you know, Formula 2 effectively. So it's you could say McLaren are inheriting that position. I think that'd be too harsh to say, but I certainly think they are doing the best job of the midfield and deserve to be there.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Carlos Sainz has been the star driver on the grid this year. Now, yes, obviously Mercedes in a class on their own, blah blah blah, right? But to put all of it, put the front runners to one side, Carlos Sainz, absolutely fantastic, because he's a driver that for me ended up at McLaren almost more by accident than design, if you know what I mean. You know, a couple of years back, we would have thought there's a chance of progression into the Red Bull senior team. You know, he then goes to Renault, things, you know, I think he does okay there, but it was more because of the situation with Ricciardo last year that kind of triggered a very unexpected shake-up in the driver market, and Sainz ended up at McLaren. But he's made the most of that situation. I think he's been fantastic, and having Lando Norris alongside him there as well, for me, means that McLaren have arguably the most balanced driver pairing on the grid at the moment, because both of them complement each other quite well. Both of them seem to get on as well, which is of course one aspect of motorsport that we sometimes gloss over. But I just hope that McLaren now don't try and break things up. They don't try and too much here, and they don't try and go back and lure Fernando Alonso to return to the sport next year.
Well, I feel, regrettably, for Fernando Alonso, it would be difficult for him to make a return to McLaren in the sense that that relationship soured a lot after the sheer embarrassment of what happened at the Indianapolis 500, where the team failed to qualify, or Alonso failed to qualify for the start of that particular race. He was obviously trying to get the Triple Crown. That didn't work out. So do I think Alonso has lost a lot of trust in McLaren? You know, he wanted to go there, win the Indy 500 McLaren, so Alonso has been very clear. I mean, for how many years has it always been about that third world championship? And 2012, you know, he came so close, and that was such an exciting battle that year, because both Vettel and Alonso at that point were vying to become the youngest man to win those three world championships. But for Alonso, through various reasons, you know, is it poor decision-making? He's not been able to win that elusive third world championship. So I can't see him coming back to McLaren, but if the option was there, you know, if I was in charge, I would still take a Fernando Alonso every day of the week, because I still think he's the best of the generation. Is Carlos Sainz the best of the generation? Probably not.
Yeah, but he's not put a foot wrong.
He's not put a foot wrong, but I'm just saying, who's the best driver? And I think that's Fernando Alonso. I think Carlos Sainz is a top driver. You know, I highly rate him. I think he deserves to be there. But I'm just saying, if Alonso was there, I would take Fernando Alonso.
Nah, for me, Alonso would be a stopgap solution. You know,
it would be a stopgap. I think you're right, it would be a stopgap solution. But I think everybody would like to see Fernando Alonso back there. And I still think he's got a lot to offer the sport.
Well,
let's flip the question. You know, it would be extremely harsh, and I wouldn't like to see Sainz or Norris lose their seat. But here's a question. Would Fernando Alonso be doing better than Sainz or Norris, do you think?
Would he be doing better? I don't see what more, you know, we expect from Carlos Sainz. He's went from 19th to what, you know, I mean, he had a crack.
Yeah, he had a great race in Austria, but looking at the season as a whole, Carlos Sainz, 30 points, you know, Gasly in 43. Could you see Alonso getting more points, or do you think Sainz really is getting the maximum out of that McLaren package?
I think Sainz is getting the maximum out of that McLaren package, because, you know, okay, first three races didn't go to plan, you know, retiring in Melbourne 19th, 14th, but then he starts picking up the results. You know, he's finished, two sixth places and two eighths, one seventh, I think, as well, in Baku. For me, Sainz has been absolutely fine. The one thing with Lando is he starts. They are hurting him at the moment, but a very talented driver in there as well. You could keep those two for 10 years easy. They're still very young, you know. Sainz is, what, 24? Lando Norris, of course, much younger than that, just 19, 20 in November. Build your team around that. Build your team for the future. They've had a terrible last few years. We all know that. Work towards the next set of regulations. Get that car right and crack on from there. The big question mark, though, of course, is around the engine supplier. You know, would Mercedes power them again? Not too sure. Ferrari's an obvious no. Honda an obvious no. It's Renault or bust. You know, Renault or build your own engine. I can't really see any other manufacturers coming in to not be a works entry and just provide an engine. So that's the one thing that will potentially hold that team back in years to come.
In hindsight, do you think they should have stuck with Honda?
I think the change had to be made, Adam. You know, I've got obviously Honda doing reasonably well just now with Red Bull, but we know how good Red Bull's chassis is too. And of course, they used Toro Rosso last year as a bit of a testing bed for the team. I think the change had to be made. There was too much damage that had been done between McLaren and Honda. It was just a relationship that wasn't working, and sometimes that's for the best. The concern for me with that team, though, is if the works Renault team continues to be beaten by McLaren, because they will, you know, the big bosses will turn around and say, "But why is our team not doing better?" Yeah. And then a difficult decision might be made. I know over the last 18 months, I mean, I've been sticking the boot into McLaren a fair whack. Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And rightfully so. It's been an absolute horror show over the last few years. And a driver of Fernando Alonso's calibre has been wasted over the last few 100%. Years as well. But I just hope that they don't get too carried away and the narrative comes around this, "Oh, we've made a triumphant return." Like, just take it easy over the next few years. Get to the next set of regulations. If the car's good, you've got a great chance because you've got two talented drivers in there. But just don't get carried away is the point I'm making.
I think that's a key point, because really McLaren have only started to really assert themselves as that leading midfield team in the past two races. You know, and okay, the tracks are fairly different, but at the same time, you know, we could have a situation where Renault, who will be making sure that they do have a lot of upgrades, because it will be close between Renault and McLaren come the final race of the season in Abu Dhabi. But I think that's extremely important for McLaren, that they don't get carried away, just because, you know, they've both had both drivers in the points in the last two races. That didn't happen previously, so it's just been two races where they've been the dominant midfield team, and things can change quickly in Formula One. Now, moving on to MotoGP, and the final race before the summer break takes place in Germany this weekend. Yamaha's Maverick Viñales secured the team's first victory of 2019 after he won the Dutch Grand Prix at Assen last Sunday. And joining us to chat all things MotoGP is Josh Close from our friends at the Checkered Flag. And Josh, before we look ahead to this weekend, we had confirmation from Ducati that they've retained Danilo Petrucci for next season. What's your initial thoughts on that?
Yes, that's correct. I think it's a right decision, personally. Petrucci is one of the hardest working riders out there. You know, he's come up the hard way through World Superstock, even. And he's proved his class this year. You know, the win at Mugello, back-to-back podiums. And he's not afraid to fight for his rides. You know, he's not afraid to challenge Dovi or anybody around him, for that matter. So I think it's a good decision. What it does do as well is it puts him in line with all the other riders, with contracts due to run out next season. So it's interesting, we could see a double rider swap at the end of 2020. Maybe that's what they're thinking as well. But personally, I think it's a good choice.
And how would you assess Petrucci's first half of the season? Because, you know, he didn't have some great results at the start of the season, but certainly in recent races, he has been a lot closer to Andrea Dovizioso. And if you go back to France, you know, it was fairly tight. They've had some fairly tight battles. So how do you see that also, that relationship progressing? Because we saw last year, Dovizioso and Lorenzo, that relationship broke down. So it's important for Ducati to ensure that Dovizioso and Petrucci both work together well as teammates.
Sure, that's the case. I mean, Petrucci's shown he's not afraid to put a move on Dovizioso, that's for sure. And I think as the season goes on, you know, if Dovi is falling out of contention for the title, then Petrucci won't hold back. But at the same time, if things do turn around, I think Petrucci's got that side to him that will go, you know what, on this occasion, Dovizioso needs the points. So I think he'll be a team player, more so than Lorenzo was, you could say.
And last weekend in Assen, Maverick Viñales getting that win for Yamaha. How big a victory is that for both team and rider?
Oh, it's absolutely huge for both parties, but especially Viñales. You know, after the fallout from Catalunya, you know, he was very, very angry with Lorenzo, rightly so in some ways. He's very much a confidence rider. If he's happy, he's fast. If his head drops, then his performances drop and he falls back down the order. But he seems to have found that perfect setup, and I think it could be a turning point for both him and Yamaha, because they desperately needed that victory you know, it's the first time since Phillip Island in 2018, so they were desperate. And I believe it could be a turning point in the definitely Mavericks year for sure.
And why have they been struggling? Because I remember in this show last year, we were talking about Yamaha's struggles, and at the start of this year, you know, we were expecting a bit more, and it looks as if they had made a small improvement year on year, but the results just haven't been there until that win last weekend.
No, as you say, at the start of the year, there were some signs that they may be on the up again, but it all seems to be with the setup and the differences between certainly Valentino and Maverick. They both kind of like the bikes up in different ways, and you know, they kind of, I don't know what it is really, they keep getting mixed up, you know, which way to go, and it does cost them both on the track essentially. It's deciding which route to go down and who to favour more, you could say, in a way. Because right now, Valentino's struggling, Maverick's top of the world, so it's hard to put a finger on it specifically, but I'm hoping this can be a turnaround for them.
And let's talk about Valentino Rossi. Some interesting comments in the media today from various parties. You know, he's not taken a win in 2 years now, failed to score in the last three races. Some people jumping to conclusions saying he is perhaps finished. Is that the case?
Well, jumping to that conclusion is a very easy thing to do. You know, he's 40 years old now, and as soon as he makes one mistake, people jump on that bandwagon. I think the only person that knows deep down is him himself, you know. Certainly, Mugello crash and last weekend was down to him, but in Catalonia, you know, he got took out by Lorenzo. So it's hard to put your finger on it. He's definitely struggling more now to keep up with the young guys, you know, your Marc Marquez's, Vinales now even, and with more youngsters coming up, he is possibly running out of time. His talent's still there and he's still got the love for the sport, that's for sure, but if his performances keep dropping, he always said that's the point where he'll consider it. So I think he's got some important thinking to do over the next few weeks, and if he don't get a result this weekend heading into the summer break, he could be having some difficult decisions made.
Now, Rossi is still the leading Yamaha rider, and do you think he's maybe pressing too much, and perhaps that's why some of the mistakes are coming from Valentino, or the frustrations, because the Yamaha bike just isn't as competitive as, say, the Ducati and the factory Honda and the Suzuki?
Yeah, it must be really frustrating for him to see all these bikes, you know, getting better week by week. You know, Ducati over the last few years, and Suzuki this year in particular, made a huge step forward, and yet the Yamaha just seems to have stalled. So for him now to also be seeing Maverick winning, and obviously you've got Fabio on the Petronas bike, it will be starting to bug him a bit. Over the last few years, even though he hasn't been the most competitive, he's still been top Yamaha man. So no questions were really asked. But the way it's going, he's not going to have that comfort zone. And the questions are going to keep on being asked. He's going to get more frustrated, and it could lead to problems for him, that's for sure.
And a quick word on Marc Marquez leading the championship by a big margin now, especially after that crash a couple of races ago in Catalonia, which took out the likes of Dovizioso and Rossi and co, because he has such a great records at this track in Germany, doesn't he?
He does indeed. He's going for the perfect 10 this weekend, the 10th pole in a row and the 10th race win, and it's really looking ominous for the rest of the field, I have to say. However, it does depend on how he takes this weekend and his mindset. You know, he's got a huge, I think it's a 44-point lead now. So is that fear of dropping points gone? Is he going to push extra hard to get that perfect 10? You know, people often say the only person that can cost Marquez a win is Marquez. So it all kind of depends on his mindset, if you ask me, going into the weekend, because, you know, at Assen, he admitted that he went for the soft tyre to kind of hold off the Suzukis, and he settled for second for the championship. You know, he's got that buffer now. He's got that perfect 10 in sight. I just think he might go for break this weekend.
And a quick word on Stefan Bradl, who will be Marquez's teammate after Lorenzo while he still recovers. It's a home race for Bradl as well. What can we expect from Stefan this weekend?
Yeah, that's true. Lorenzo's unfortunate accident has led to a dream scenario for Brado to get out there in front of his home fans once again. So he'll be pumped up for this weekend for sure. You know, he's put a lot of miles in on the Honda. He finished 10th earlier in the year at Jerez. And he's also finished 4th here before for LCR. So he'll be up for it, that's for sure. I don't think he'll be challenging, you know, top five, but it will certainly pick up a handful of points. And it may even boost the attendance, you never know.
Absolutely. Josh, thanks very much for joining us on the show this evening. Very much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
That's Josh Close there from our friends at the Checkered Flag speaking to us here on Rock Sport Radio.
All right, it's one of the largest motoring garden parties in the world. And it's back for another year with the Goodwood Festival Speed entertaining the crowds with lots to offer both on and off the track. Rally expert David Halley is there at the moment and he joins us now. David, what is it that makes the Goodwood Festival so special?
It's the contacts that they have around the world of motorsport and classic cars, the draw of the vehicles that they can pull on from all around the world and bring to this garden party in the south of England. It's just a phenomenal number of cars that you would not see anywhere else, and it just attracts everybody to the event. It's fabulous.
Absolutely, and great to see so many different cars from different eras in motorsport as well, David, climb up that hill. But none of them would be able to do just that without the marshals behind the scenes who make sure that things all go smoothly.
Exactly. In any form of motorsport, the sport doesn't happen without the marshals. Now, I have travelled from the north of the country to the very south, and I am marshalling on the rally stage. Now, the rally stage was put in 2005 to provide a proper backdrop for rally cars to show off their pace. And we have everything from cars from the 1960s right up to the current cars. Mads Osberg was there today in the WRC Citroen C3, giving it plenty around the short stage. And it's an atmosphere where people can come. People who aren't necessarily interested in rallying can come and see at very close quarters cars being exercised in the forest.
Yeah, and Lancia Stratos was doing the rounds earlier today as well, David. One of the real iconic classic rally cars.
There are so many iconic cars there. The Stratos, as you say, Theatre Bath 131 in the iconic Alitalia livery, same as the Stratos. Peugeot 205 T16 Group B car, Group B Audis, Group 4 Audis, Group A Audis, all the R5 cars. We've had the Fiesta R5 here. So, just a huge number of all the different ranges of cars. Some being Tiger. There you go. 1960s sports car with an American V8 engine in it. It's there doing its stuff. Austin Maxi from the World Cup rally of the 1970s. It's out there showing off. And it just encompasses the whole range of rally cars from the beginning of time of rallying.
So out of all of them then, David, what's the one you're most looking forward to at Goodwood this weekend?
Well, Stratos. Stratos is just, you mentioned it yourself, it's iconic. And this is a genuine works Alitalia Stratos, driven by Bjorn Voldegard in period. It is unsilenced. We don't have at Goodwood to comply with the normal current noise regulation, so it runs to 1970s noise regulation, and it's glorious. A V6 howl echoing through the forest. You just can't believe how good that sounds compared to modern pop fart turbo cars.
David, let's take a look at some of the big stories in rally this week now. The first one I want to just get your thoughts on is Hayden Padden. He's got an outing for M Sport at Rally Finland that's been announced this week. What's your reaction to that?
Something that I think Hayden felt he had to do. He was bypassed for a Finnish drive with Craig Breen getting the Hyundai drive. Hayden's got very strong contacts with Hyundai New Zealand, and he was really quite upset that Hyundai had decided to go with Craig rather than himself. Now, Craig's got a very good record in Finland, but so is Hayden. So it was Hyundai did what they did for whatever reasons Hayundai decided. Aiden then realised he had to get himself back in the world championship scene in front of team managers. Being in New Zealand, he's been doing the New Zealand championship, that's fine, but he's not in front of the world championship manager, so it was important for him. And M Sport obviously is a way to do that, to bring his sponsors to M Sport, and his sponsors have perked up and said, okay, we'll fund you for a drive at M Sport. So M Sport have made a car available to him. It'd be great to see him back in the championship, and I'm sure he really wants to put one over on Craig Breen.
Well, yes, but given that Paddon has such close ties with Hyundai, is this likely to just be a one-off with M Sport, David?
I expect so. I expect that it's not cheap to run a World Rally car in Finland or on any event. So he'll have had to have come up with a fair amount of money to be able to do this. And, I don't think if the money pit was bottomless, he'd already be in the championship. Yeah. He doesn't have that pit of money, so he's having to pick and choose what he does. He desperately wants to be back in the championship, so this is a way for him to bring himself back to the Northern Hemisphere and show off what he can do.
And David, you mentioned the Fiesta R5 just earlier there. Of course, that was in action at Ypres last weekend. Good to see that car and the potential that it has as well.
Yes, it's a completely new redesign based on the new shape Fiesta. Now, the World Rally car that we currently run was based on that new shape Fiesta that came out a couple of years ago. The R5 is only just becoming that shape. It mirrors, the new R5 mirrors the shape of the World Rally car, not using the same panels. It's not allowed to, but it does mimic the shape of it. It's had a complete redesign from the ground up. There are so many differences. Because the what we would call the current R5 Fiesta is 5 years old in its design. And while it's kept pace and there's been some evolutions, particularly in the engine department, and it's still a winning car, as we know, this new car does take it another step forward. So there's a lot of interest in the car. The car was used as a course car at the weekend. It's not fully homologated quite yet. So it was used as a course car, and a lot of people saw the car and are interested in buying it, which can only help M Sport.
Absolutely. And David, looking at the British Rally Championship for a moment, Matt Edwards, who led the way in that category, and now 20 points clear, I believe, at the top of the standings as well.
He's at the top of the standings on the same points as Tom Cave. The two of them are together at the top of the standings, and Tom Cave finished second. So, yes, M Sport completed their annual complete wiring change on a car. It seems to be Ypres that brings up a problem, and they did it again in a record time. And Matt Edwards managed to nurse the car where he had to when he was suffering from a bit of a misfire, but gave it plenty when he had full power. Brought the car home for a second Ypres win. Tom Cave in second. Alex Laffey, a very good third place as far as BRC runners are concerned. Now, this event for the British Rally Championship runs as part of the big Belgian event, so three Brits in the top 10, although as far as the British Rally Championship are concerned, they're 1, 2 and 3. The big news, of course, was that Craig Breen won it. So Mr. Breen, who has been touting himself around as a driver for hire, went into this event and won it, which is just great for him as well.
Just as well you keep me right, David. Craig Breen was right here. Keep me right again here. Craig Breen was in a Polo GTI R5.
Correct. Yes. Absolutely correct. He was giving the Volkswagen a while. He has been a gun for hire this year, following his removal from the Citroen squad, and he has just been keeping himself, as we talked about just a few minutes ago with Hayden Paddon, putting himself in front of the team managers. That's exactly what Craig has done. He's been out there getting results and showing what he can do. And although Craig never had the luck in the World Championship in his first stint there up until last year, when you see him up against normal, regular national drivers, you can see that he is a class above. And he really deserves to be in the World Championship as well.
David, just finally, there's one story I just want to pick you up on, because we've got the Safari Rally World Rally Candidate event about to take place. How important is that one? Because the talk is, of course, that event will be on the World Rally calendar next year.
It's more a case of what event don't we have on the calendar. If Safari gets in, there's a reluctance from all of the entrants to do more events. Yes, a candidate event these days now has to provide funding for the teams for their transport. They can't just put on an event and expect the teams to turn up. They have to provide the wherewithal to get the teams there. But in terms of car preparation and all the rest of it, it's not just the getting the teams out there, it's the on costs of events. I'm sure the teams would love to do a proper safari. The drivers would love to do a real safari rally. And there is a move, obviously, for... We've had a bit of small rallying going on in tight places and loops and central servicing. Safari may be that little bit different to add something new-ish to the agenda for the current World Championship.
Oh, absolutely. David, great stuff. Thank you very much, as always, for your time. Best of luck down at Goodwood this weekend. I can't say I'm not massively jealous. but go out there and enjoy. And
Absolutely, I'm surrounded by classic rally cars and classic cars. I'm in a pub car park, and we've got Sunbeam Alpines and Honda NSXs and all sorts of things in the car park. It's just there's just so many petrol heads down in this neck of the wood. Every car park is jam full of vehicles of interesting lots. Every piece of grass is a campsite, and it's a massive party atmosphere at the moment down here.
Excellent, and enjoyed. That's rally expert David Halley there speaking to us on Rock Sport Radio.
Now let's find out the latest from the Scottish scene by getting the Superfast Scotch Roundup with Glenn Alcock.
Hello guys, good evening to everybody who's listening. So, British Superbikes at the weekend, so great two-wheel action from Knockhill, even in the wet conditions. So great driving from Taylor McKenzie to win the Pirelli National Superstock 1000 Championship, with Lewis Rollo recovering from being pushed off and finishing in fourth position. And Taylor Brothers Taran in the second round just secured the podium. Rory Skinner was competing also in the Dickies British Super Sport Championship with a sixth place in the first race, and he just missed out on a podium in race two after, unfortunately, a technical problem forced him to retire. We also had the BTCC, so it was a nail-biter at Oulton Park, especially race three, with Rory Butcher looking like he'd win before an off dropped him back to fifth. In race one, he finished fourth, and he was seventh in race two. He now sits fourth in the championship, and he's 48 points behind Colin Turkington. Aidan Moffat improved race by race, so he finished 18th in race 1, 14th race 2 and 9th in race 3. We had the Blancpain GT World Challenge at Misano. Finlay Hutchison finished 10th in race 1 and had a personal best of 5th in race 2 in GT3. And in GT4 we had Ewan Mackay finishing 6th and then 2nd. The Lamborghini Super Trofeo, Watkins Glen, saw Sandy Mitchell finishing twice in the podium with a 2nd place, then following it up with a 3rd. Ryan Dalziel was also racing at Watkins Glen in IMSA, and he finished 12th after a fuel stop problem caused him to drop back, and he'd been fighting for the lead as well, so that's unfortunate for Ryan. Calder Motorsports, we've talked to them in the past just with some of the sprint championship stuff. So Colin took the top spot at the British Sprint Championship at Aintree, and his daughter Louise won both rounds of the Scottish Championship at Boindy. And you've already been listening to David Halley there, so Goodwood Festival of Speed this weekend, and we're celebrating the life of Jackie Stewart, basically. So 50 years since he took his first Formula One title, and he turned 80 years old just a month or two ago. There's going to be a lot of Jackie's cars on display and stuff, so that should be a good celebration of the contribution to world motorsport by Sir Jackie. We also have the 2017 Le Mans winner, Johnny Adam, and he'll be taking his Aston Martin Vantage GTE up the hill. So that'll be impressive to see. Also looking forward, so next week we've got the new Jim Clark Motorsport Museum. It opens on Thursday, July the 11th. I'm going to be there to see it, so I'm really looking forward to that. I've been to the old Jim Clark room, and it's really impressive, the renovations that they've done, and it's looking like a world-class establishment. So I'll pop along and I'll get some photos, and I should be able to tell you about it next week. Dario Franchitti's loaned a Lotus Cortina, which was raced by Jim in the 1964 British Saloon Car Championship, so a forerunner to the BTCC, and he's allowing it to be on display, and there'll also be one of Jim's F1 cars, so it'll be his Lotus 25 from 1962. And that's pretty much this week's roundup.
And Glenn, just to pick you up on the Jim Clark one, I mean, the new museum, they've been so long in the making as well, and I really cannot wait to see that finally open its doors next week.
Yeah, it's going to be something really, really special, I think. I mean, I tried to get quite a bit of support at the time through Superfast Scotch just to donate some money, and I think, you know, Jim is such a massive, massive star, and we really need that kind of world-class you know, facility to celebrate everything that he contributed to motorsport in general, but particularly Formula One. But obviously, he won the Indy 500, and you know, he took part in the British Rally and stuff like that. But he is, you know, if you don't know much about him, if you pop along to Dunn's and see the place, it'll really open your eyes to what a star he really was. You know, we've talked about my visit when I went to Imola, and you know, I'm a big fan of Ayrton Senna. You know, Jim Clark is of that magnitude, and you know, I think it's looking like it's going to be a really, really incredible place to visit. The old Jim Clark room was great. You know, it was maybe, you know, of its time, and I think they've really tried to bring it, you know, into a sort of new age. And yeah, I'll tell you all about it next week.
Excellent. Look forward to that, Glenn. Thank you very much, as always, for your time here on Pole Position.
No problem, thank you.
That's the Superfast Scots roundup there with Glenn Alcock. All right, now it's time for a little bit of this.
Final lap on Pole Position on Rock Sport Radio.
It's that time of the show, Adam, as you tell us six stories from the world of motorsport this week in just 60 seconds. So it's a new month, first show of July, so let's see if you can get us off to a flyer, because Adam, your time starts now.
More bad news for Rich Energy after they've been ordered not to use their Stag logo in the UK and reveal payments made to the Haas team. Haas haven't displayed the logo on their cars since the Canadian Grand Prix. Red Bull's chief technical officer Adrian Newey is set to make a one-off return to racing in Japan. Newey will drive an Nissan GT-R GT3 in the Super Taikyu series later this month. The Kimi Ring, which will play host to the Finnish MotoGP round from next year onwards, has undergone an inspection. MotoGP and FIM officials visited the track ahead of a two-day test next month. The Bathurst Regional Council is continuing its funding search as it looks to build the second circuit at Mount Panorama. A new circuit to the existing one is set to cost $52 million, with $27.5 million already raised through government and federal funding. Formula 3 will race at Macau this year, with changes being made to the track. The new cars are much faster than the old ones, so the track has been adjusted to suit the series. And finally, a fleet of racing cars from the demise of the Aussie Driver Programme have appeared in online auction. It comes after the series entered voluntary liquidation earlier this year.
Go. Start what you mean to go on, Adam.
P1 Sebastian, P1.
You know, it's one of the things, you know, I remember when Sebastian was so dominant at Red Bull and he would do that pointing thing with his finger. Yes, yes. Remember, everybody used to absolutely hate
that. Well, that just shows you, doesn't it, the change, you know. Now you'd be quite happy if Sebastian Vettel won 13 races a season just to spice up, perhaps not as many as that. But yeah, it's strange how it kind of ebbs and flows, isn't it? Mm. You know, one minute he's dominating, you know, hated in Italy, you know, the boos and the podium in Monza in 2013. Now he's adored by the Ferrari fans, who, or a lot of them, shall we say, and gets the support from them. So it's amazing how these kind of things evolve over time. But yeah, it would be good to see a bit more, a bit spiced up. And of course, Ferrari, Kimi Raikkonen, the last man still to win for Ferrari.
Incredible statistic.
You know, Honda have won a race now this season. Ferrari, zilch, Honda won. So big pressure on Ferrari.
Yeah, and it's not as if they've not had the chances to take those wins as well, Adam. You know, and I dare say that's the concerning matter, Ferrari. I think Ferrari, they know Mercedes are as good as they are. The concerning thing, in my opinion, that they will have is the fact that Red Bull are so close and arguably better at the moment than that Maranello team.
Well, if you have two Max Verstappens, they would be. And that's Red Bull's problem at the moment. We touched on it earlier on the show. Pierre Gasly, how long are they going to give him? That's the big question, as we mentioned. And, you know, I think even though they do have a shortage of drivers that they can call up from the programme, I'm sure there's a few drivers that will be eyeing up that seat, that's for sure. So perhaps if he's not performing by the summer break, it's a big few races coming up for Gasly, that's for sure.
So, right, I'll ask you one last question on the show this week. If it's not Danny Kvyat that goes in for Gasly, who is it?
I'm going to say Alonso. Why not? I think it'd be great. Bring him back in. Let's get Verstappen via Alonso.
I tell you what, if Alonso does return to Formula 1 next year, the only team I can see him going is to Red Bull. Ferrari, I can't see it. I just can't see it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there was this... I follow like the Spanish press because they obviously cover a lot of Alonso, and that's what they were saying. But they made a full story on Alonso liking a post from like a few years ago saying, oh, could he rejoin Ferrari just because he liked the post? So... unlikely.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one, of course, here on Pole Position, because unfortunately that's all we've got time for. But we'll be back from 8 o'clock next Thursday night to do it all again. My thanks to Adam, to our guests, and to you for joining us as well. And stay tuned for The Rock Zone coming up next.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.